I just came back from the salon, and for the record, I went with a sassy little bob and quiet luxury shade of blonde. Yes, that's literally what we're calling it, quiet luxury. Aside from trips to the salon, I don't actually blow out my hair. My hair is naturally wavy, and that's why I love Way. Way's new anti-frizz cream is a lightweight cream that provides immediate frizz control that lasts for up to 72 hours. I know that I have a limited amount of time with wet, wavy hair in which to get myself in order. And that is why I love the anti-frizz cream. It has notes of bergamot, Italian lemon, violet, and more. And it smells unbelievable. Truly, as someone who is a little bit sensitive to scents, I put this in my hair and I feel great. It also genuinely pairs well with my perfume, which I appreciate. I don't blow out my hair because after years of color processing and attempting to make it straight, I know it looks better and stays healthier when I avoid blow drying, which is why I love the anti-frizz cream. I've used products, especially with wavy hair, where it feels heavy and looks kind of wet. And that's why I love Way's anti-frizz cream, because it enhances the natural waves in my hair. I still look like me, just a little elevated. And P.S., I am way obsessed with Way's other bestsellers. Their leave-in conditioner, detox shampoo, my personal favorite. Frizz-free up your schedule with Way. Go to theouai.com and enter promo code Andy for 15% off any product. That's theouai.com with promo code Andy. I always ask for credit, and sometimes Visa denies me.
We're going with it. Growing up, TV was my best friend. Now, Bravo is my best frenemy.
Okay, that's a real timeline. I am so upset. Like, I knew mine wasn't good, but I thought, you give it a little flavor. You give a little something. You give a little shush with your personality, Sarah. Remember how sometimes you have one? And it did not work out for me.
You killed it. Come on, you short yourself. Yours was good. I'm not even happy with mine. We do what we can.
I mean, I think I do, but who's to say? Who's to say in this merry little world? But guys, listen, it's Andy's Girls. It's episode 277, which I also said for the last episode, but you know what? I have COVID, and I'm pretty sure the numbers are right here. And I'm so excited to have a return guest to the People's Couch. You know her as a content creator on Instagram and more, whose bio describes her better than I ever could. Think of her voice in the Bravo world as if Dateline and SportsCenter had a Bravo baby. Mm-hmm. Is there any better way to describe yourself? I think not. Welcome back to Andy's Girls. Bravo, Bravo, ducking Bravo.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. Highlight of my week.
Oh my God, highlight of my week. I'm so excited to have you back on the pod. Thank you. You know I die for you. You know I die for your social.
Likewise.
And listen, could there be a better week to talk about Bravo?
There's a lot going on.
How are you feeling? How are you feeling?
Overwhelmed.
Yeah. In a good way, because it's like the too much tuna. Like, there's just like so much happening. Shout out Kroll Show. Shout out Oh Hello. Like, it's like an embarrassment of riches stuff. Or is it kind of like, which direction do I go down? Because there's just so much to discuss.
There's so much to discuss, number one. Two, I got to say, we're dealing with a new environment right now as Bravo lovers, because it's not just Bravo. Now we got Peacock stuff coming at us from the side that we got to keep up with as well. So, and I don't know. I haven't even started watching Miami, and I feel the pressure. You told me it's great. I know.
I got to tell you, not only is it good, and sorry, guys, I'm in a COVID cough now and again because I'm still recovering, but not only is it good, but the episode that just went up, we're recording this Friday morning-ish, that just went up with Alexia and her family is one of the saddest, realest, but not sad in a way where it's like, for me watching it, it wasn't sad in a way where it's like so cringe or so dark. Okay. It's just, it felt very, for anyone who's experienced enormous tragedy or loss, especially if it's like a younger member of your family, to watch Alexia navigate what is happening with her son and the challenges of her older son, her younger son, who sustained an incredibly severe brain injury after a life-altering, life-threatening car accident, and to watch how their family is handling that in the years since, and also how her fiance has thoughts and feels about it. It's a very intense scene specifically this week. It's something, you know, I just did a Patreon episode that's up with Damien, OG of the AG, Damien Bellino, and we talked about it for a while because I have my own perspective as someone whose brother sustained a high-level spinal cord injury several years ago, and I think I have felt the way everyone in that room has felt about my family's structure and state of affairs in the years that have followed. And just to say a long-winded way for the very first time of saying Miami is doing incredible things, and not just, and it's an oddity to talk about that scene because overall the franchise feels so light, so energetic. The cast is great. Really interesting people with interesting stories. People who were terrible during the first season are fucking hilarious now. Like, it's and we get into that on the Patreon. It's like unbelievable. Maybe there's a Kardashian effect or who knows what. But it's just incredible television. And I also just think specific to Alexia's family situation, it's just incredibly powerful is how I would describe it. So I cannot say enough. There are only 5 episodes. I don't think you have to, you know, Damien and I talk about this. I am, as is he, typically like a Bravo purist where it's like watch everything. But you can start with the reboot. And if you love it and you want to understand more about their relationships, you can dip back. But like, because there are so many new characters, you know, like half the cast is new.
Okay.
So it's not necessary. I just would highly recommend it. Highly recommend it. It's great. It's great. I can't say enough about it.
Okay. I will check it out. I really will. Because I remember I did watch Miami back in the day. It's just fuzzy to me. So it'll all come back. It'll come flooding back, like who had beef with who and what happened. But yeah, I'll check it out. 5 episodes deep is not so intimidating that I feel like I can't do it.
Larsa is so funny.
Is she?
Or otherwise. She was, I thought, one of the worst housewives, one and done, like just a mess her first season. And I'm so enjoying her. And like the things that fall out of her mouth, like they just genuinely fall out.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even know that they did. Like she doesn't even know that they're worth picking up. She's like, oh, I guess it's on the floor now. Like it's just incredible.
Love that.
Incredible.
Okay, good. Yeah, because I think so many franchises, and this was going to be one of my points for OC, is like I'm really liking that, you know, OC is shaken up and they brought Heather back and whatever. But when I'm watching it, I'm just saying to myself, like, what's real and what's not? Because I feel like the thirst abounds. Are you getting that at all? Is that coming through for you?
Tell me more about that. Is that, do you think that was specific to this week's episode? Where do you feel like the thirst is emanating?
Well, maybe it's this week's episode, but it's also, I think, you know, it's not just this week's episode. It is, but it isn't. But it's just like, I don't know. I feel like I really enjoy Emily and Gina, like who they are as people are, you know, entertaining and everything, but they are keeping the show going. Like if I was imagining them all in a canoe, like they've got the paddles, like they are talking to one party, going to the other party, telling them, like, that's what's keeping the show going so far. Like Gina sat down, told Heather what's happening, that caused the thing, you know, Emily's over there talking with, Nicole, like it's just those two are spinning the plates. So they're carrying a lot of the weight. And so I say to myself, like, Dr. Jen and Noella and their fight last night. And to me, that was like an ultimate, you know, like thirst off between the two of them. Like you tagged me in a photo and I'm like, this is wild. This is Instagram like influencer problems. I don't even know what we're fighting about right now. I don't know. How does it strike you?
I thought it was so entertaining. I thought it was a
It
throwback to classic Housewives. Like,
was.
is it stupid? Yes. Is that the point? 100%. Do these
True.
women acknowledge the stupidity while also trying to like harm the other one's reputation on the show? 1000%. And is Noella probably better at it than Jen? Yeah. Like, it's. They're both being done. You know, the interesting, fascinating thing to me about this is like Jen isn't wrong, but Noella is better at this than her. Like Jen doesn't know how to communicate it through the lens of reality TV. She doesn't necessarily know how to deliver a line. And sometimes that misunderstanding or misapprehension about how you're going to be perceived, like the
Oh,
ability to
yeah.
have like a reality TV third eye where you're like,
It's true. It is what it is.
I can look to the future and understand how this is going to be not only shot but maybe edited.
Yeah.
Jen isn't thinking that way. And sometimes that's a benefit, and it might be a benefit for us, but definitely not her. In watching her just land things with a thud. And Noella is like, I would argue, much thirstier in some ways than Jen, but just is more interesting as a
Yeah.
personality. And so it's wild watching that navigate because, like, how do you feel about this whole marriage stuff? The like, she was married before, but it wasn't real, but I'm gonna gloss over it because obviously, if he's filing for divorce, it is now. Like, how do you think that landed with what do you think Jen was trying to do in that moment?
You know, that it did bother me a little bit towards the end of the episode, and I wrote it in my little one of my little like screen recaps, which is that, you know, Jen, look, first of all, let me rewind and say Noella reading Jen and telling her her photo had bad lighting brought me a
Oh
level
my
of
God.
joy that I have not had in a really long time. I cherish that. I might replay it later. Because it, she didn't call her, she didn't need to curse, she didn't need to get nasty. She said your photo had bad lighting and it wasn't cute. And that is such a burn. I loved it. I live for it. And I feel like now that's just what we say to each other when we're trying to hurt one another, because that's more powerful. That's more powerful than anything. It's like when Caroline Manzo, you know, called her a clown, right? It's like that right there, it just had a moment of purity because you could tell it's like a little kid being honest. It was very hurtful. Anyway, I could tell that really bothered Jen. So fast forward, now she tries to get the big guns out and she's like calling her unstable and, you know, concerned for her. And I'm like, we're going a little too far now. Like that's not even as impactful as you're trying to be. And I feel like it was too much. It was a bit much. And you know, they're talking about her needing a therapist, which might be true, but you know, she is going through something, I'm sure. The marriage situation, gosh, it just seems like a hot mess express. And there's been a lot of rumors, and I don't know what's real. Like someone said, okay, well, you know, he was still married to his first wife, and they were calling each other husband and wife. And, you know, they had an open relationship. And then Sweet James posts his video where he's like, I experimented with, I don't care. I don't care. Did you cut off the credit cards and leave her penniless while she's supporting your child or not? Like, just handle your stuff. But then I asked myself, like, he obviously has his face on billboards up and down, you know, California and other states. Is he thriving in this moment? Is he happy about this level of awareness and attention, whether it's good or bad, just because it makes him, you know, amplifies who he is as a person? I don't know. That's what I worry about with personalities like that.
Man, you made so many great points. Yeah, the Sweet James specific stuff is just, it's so much. She went to a 13 here during her first season in such a way where we don't know, we didn't even get an introduction to this person
Yeah.
because day two, her husband surprised her with a divorce. So, like, it's an odd thing to try to figure out what's the truth here, what's the reality, how is it being presented or shifted for reality TV, if at all, or is it just a complete clusterfuck, which it seems like it is. And also, the way that some of us understood or were introduced to her prior to the episodes was with all of these, let's call them like wealth thirst shots.
Bronwyn.
On Instagram of like.
That's how I first saw her.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Through, of course, like literally through Bronwyn. Yes. But also through Noella's Instagram. It was private jet, vacay, multi-million dollar mansion. And now we're having a conversation where she's saying on social that she's squatting in her mansion because her husband hasn't paid rent. And he's saying it was only rented for the show.
Wow.
And she's saying that isn't true. But I'm thinking I became aware of you. This is the whole, the filter of Instagram is Valencia, but it's also enormous, the ruse of cash.
Yes.
And so me hearing her be like, oh, they're paying rent on that? Like, they even own property, but we're talking about this place in, I think, Puerto Rico. Like, how, it's a lot to try to understand and also be introduced to this person.
Yep.
It's just, it's like not just the chaos of the environment, but it's the chaos of the info being presented and then changed.
Yep.
I don't know. Like to someone might say to you, isn't this great? Not obviously not hoping for the worst for someone, but in the sense of like storyline drama, isn't it interesting for the show to have this going on? What is your response to that? Do you agree with it? Do you disagree? And why?
It is the only thing that's interesting to me, per usual, is when it turns out that that wealth was an illusion. And so that's always interesting because you watch the first couple of episodes and you see them, you know, talking about giggle, giggle, we met each other in the private jet bathroom. We had the same Cartier, you know, bracelet on, whatever, laugh, laugh. And you're like, wait, and you stop. I always stop and I'm like, how have I played my hand in this world wrong? Like, how are all of these people flying private and giggling in bathrooms? And I just don't know, like, what secret is there? And then by episode three, you're like, oh, that's right, because I'm not a grifter. Like, I always forget, like, I'm not shifting money to different properties and renting houses to make it seem like I have money, but then I'm actually in debt and not paying my taxes and like, da 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 da. So it makes me feel a little bit better. But so that to me is fascinating. Now, the personal stuff with the divorce and the marriage and we were married and we weren't and all that kind of thing, that is just a little bit overwhelming. I don't think it helps her or him. I think it makes, for me personally, makes me question like, are you guys for real? Like, what's going on? Is this a storyline that we are, you know, being shown that has legitimacy to it? Or is this absolute chaos? Is that where you thrive? And so for you, this is real. But for us, it's just like, whoa, can we take a breath? Will there ever be, you know, anything just, I don't know, stable here? It's a lot. It's a lot between the taxes we thought was a lot, right? But then it's like the marriage and the house in Puerto Rico and all this other stuff. So it's a bit much.
Yeah. And Jen really kind of fucked this up a little bit. She fumbled the reveal because I do think it is odd. And this is what I think Jen was attempting to say, that this person was obviously legally married because of the filings that have happened and the questions of, you know, where is she based? Why is this happening in Puerto Rico? And they're both residents of California, which is also where they were married. That's all fine and good. But like there are videos and photos of their first wedding, which is what Jen was trying to discuss, where they had a literal large fancy wedding, knowing he was married. This prominent attorney threw a wedding he knew was invalid, I guess for kicks. Like it wasn't a private commitment ceremony yeah. where it's like a spiritual moment. We know this isn't legally valid. Mm-hmm. It seemed like they were performing the art of wedding yes. here and marriage, which to me is a little bit odd. That is odd. Like correct. That's an odd moment that you can't, they're both participating in it. Like I want to mm-hmm. understand more of that, Noella, but for understandable reasons, we can't really get it right now. It just makes me wish that Jen was like a little bit better at communicating.
Yes, true.
Because I do think that there's some stuff to discuss. Oh, maybe there not is. Now, yeah. maybe in like 3 weeks, you know?
I know. But this is where it just almost reminds me of like a friend that you keep trying to help, but they keep getting themselves. They keep making the same bad choices. And every time you think it's going to go better, they keep making an even worse choice. And at some point you're like, I got to go take a nap. That's kind of how I feel about it. Like when I saw the, you know, the photos and was like, so wait, that wasn't a real wedding.
Right.
Okay. But all right. That's an interesting, a lot of effort and money to spend on something and have a lot of photos taken when everyone knows that it's not an actual thing. Why do it? It reminds me of like a glamour shots or like when two mm-hmm. dogs wed, like why would we do this? It's cute,
yeah,
but it's we're talking yeah. about humans, and you could just wait and have a legitimate wedding. I don't know. So that's when I'm like, I got to take a step back here. What's happening? What's real? What's not?
I mean, we did watch Carol's dog baby.
We did
not get married, but was in the bridal party.
Oh, is that what it was? Yes.
For a wedding on New York. So there is precedent there.
True, for a like fake wedding. Fake absolutely.
Weddings. But that was for her dog. You know what I'm uh-huh. saying? Like, human people are different. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's a thing that people do. I genuinely have never heard about it.
Me neither.
I've heard of people rushing divorces so that they can get married or getting engaged while they're still legally married, because as we know from like seeing many, many contested divorces play out, mm-hmm. that can take many years. I have no problem with that. It's just like the wedding of it all. I want to understand that Noella, who I guess is we're sort of being introduced to, but not really.
Mm-hmm. And maybe she'll explain it, because I feel like she's pretty open with us. And that was another thing that really struck me, was that she said she felt like Jen was too, like, revealed too much, I think was the word she used. Like, she was too much too soon. And I'm like, wow, this woman, we met her and she told us about her sex dungeon. So for her to say that she met someone and they were too much too soon, like, what happened? Tell us, Noella, give us the details about what did Dr. Jen, what is this like impression she left on you that was like so thirsty and just too much too soon?
And I mean, birds of a feather fuck up together. Maybe. And we know that the common thread is Bronwyn here. So it's like, what does that even mean? Because then there are people talking about Noella and being like, and who, I don't begrudge her for this, but like, you were really buddy-buddy with Bronwyn. You were really buddy-buddy with Vicky. Like, you know who these people are mm-hmm. and the power that they may or may not have, or just the fact that they're both very closely connected with this franchise. So when we talk about thirst, I do think that there's a difference between like the thirst in trying to, you know, promote yourself as a public figure or whatever Dr. Jen was doing on IG versus like trying to get on Housewives of OC. You yeah. know, like, I don't think that these are at the same level. They both could be criticized through the lens of like what you were trying to do to get on the show, which is a weird thing to do because it's like, don't we want people to want to be on the show? You know, like the fact that she was strategic, isn't that just a human instinct to be strategic if there's something that like that's the hashtag goal setting, you mm-hmm. know, like not to say that I'm goal setting to become Noella, but like the goal set in terms of like, what do I need to do to get here? She would not be the first person who could have potentially gotten herself a home that was outside of their means for the point of doing the show. Like Aviva and Marie Drescher moved out of their bajillion-dollar gorgeous apartment in New York into a townhouse because the apartment didn't want them to film. Like mm-hmm. it's that is one of Mikhail and Tarek Salahi had a home tour in literally someone else's home mm-hmm. with framed pictures that they said were close friends.
Yep.
You know, like they're Noella and Sweet James, which is an abomin. I don't understand marketing behind that.
Yeah.
Who wants a lawyer to be sweet? But Noella and Sweet James are not the first people to do this and to do this maybe poorly.
Mm-hmm.
It's just an interesting look for her to, as you said, contest someone as being thirsty when it's like, I don't know. I think what you've done is like way thirstier, but everybody drank.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. And you're right. It's like, you know, even Salt Lake City last season, first season, everybody was saying like, oh, half of the women are renting homes and, you know, they just want to look fancy. You know, Jen Shah renting the giant Shah mm-hmm. chalet and then another rental and Meredith and whatever. And it's like, okay, that's fine. I mean, if they can afford it, like who cares? It's more interesting to me to see someone's authentic life. Like I live here, I've owned this home. This is what I do, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I'm certainly not going to not enjoy a show because someone is like renting a property to try to look fancier.
I mean, and I feel like everybody's fight. It's like the whole phrase of like, you know, you don't know what someone else is going through.
Yeah.
Like, fuck that up a little bit and put it within the world of housewives. Everybody is fighting some sort of battle mm-hmm. in order to perform at their best on the show and or in order to salvage or celebrate their reputation. Like no one can be credibly accused of not doing that. Like every person in this cast has done something or sacrificed something in order to either attain a role on the show, mm-hmm. maintain it, or in Heather's worldview, protect her reputation while signing up for a show that in many ways was created to question it.
Yeah.
You know, like, so Noella's thing of like the money of it all, the marriage of it all, just the understanding or incomprehension or confusion about who she is and what her life was before the show and, you know, after getting cast is a big example of it because it's so explosive, but it's certainly not the only one. And I don't think anyone is safe.
Certainly not. And, you know, I thought about the other day, somebody had, you know, the classic image of Vicky yelling about the family van and she's wearing her like normal clothes,
yeah.
holding like a normal bag. And I remember her house was like very nice to me. Like when I first started watching OC, I was like, wow, that's a really nice house, but it wasn't like a gigantic, you know, $13 million mansion. And I had a moment where I saw that meme and I was like, it's so interesting what the show has become and what these people feel like they need to project in order to be accepted at the baseline now. And I don't know if that's necessary. I just don't. I mean, for every Heather, there is a Gina who's like a more mm-hmm. normal person. And to me, I don't think it's worth the risk of pretending you have that wealth when you don't, because look at Gina, people love her like because she's real and honest. And it's very interesting to me the choices that people make based on how things have escalated wealth-wise. What do you think?
I mean, I think that you need to have both of these people need to exist in the world of housewives. You do need to have escapist wealth because the whole idea of housewives was created as like, you know, a peek inside the dark reality behind these gated communities, mm-hmm. you know, like, and during that time, you know, Vicky might look normal or have a life that, you know, is going well, nowhere near the kind of wealth she would create for herself from and within the context of Housewives and obviously Kodo. But like Gina Keough had four houses and a bajillion cars.
True.
And one house was for each kid. And then the market crashed mm-hmm. and the housing market bubble exploded. And then we had housewives served with eviction notices on camera. And like, it seemed like people who were grifting on the show had been grifting for many years prior, not to call Gina a grifter, but like hashtag curtain cuffs. Like if Frank Curtin didn't start doing the grift for OC, it seemed like that was a life he had maintained for many years prior.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes to the idea of housewives, there is the idea of like how fame and the level of wealth and celebrity and value and power that brings has obviously risen. It's a different world now than it was 15, 16, however many years ago, but also the grift existed then, you know, the grift is a part of life. People in life, in their everyday lives, and obviously magnified for because of, in order to get on reality TV, but people misrepresent themselves, want to show a different side of themselves. I mean, that is sort of, don't you think that's like the ultimate storyline of Housewives?
True. You know what? That's a good point. It's just, I get nostalgic every now and then, and I think maybe the past always seems rosier to me. I'm that kind of person. Like, times were simpler. But yeah, there were still grifts. You're absolutely right. And if I think about the short-lived Real Housewives of DC, some of the best moments are the absolutely insane, wild moments from the Salahis, like when they had everybody out to the winery and they had them crushing grapes, and they were store table grapes, not winery grapes. And we were just supposed to go with it. And there was like no wine really. And there were... It's just amazing. So yeah, those moments are, I cherish those, and I forget that. So thank you for reminding me that watching somebody try to grift is pretty entertaining.
I mean, and also watching someone try to grift and watching their cast members try to figure out whether or not they should be discussing the grifting on camera. Like, are we all supposed to pretend this is normal, or do we know more information in our back pocket about this person? And how do we decide whether or not to utilize it? Like, this might be an odd connective thread here, but like, the power of Noella, the chaos involved, and the fact that she truly is appearing to show zero fucks about maintaining an order of power is best exemplified in the trailer for next week when she says to out loud, seemingly the first person to do so, and who knows how production felt about this, but she says out loud, you essentially had a Nene's Closet moment. You were physically reactive to production, like Heather Dubrow, you aggressed members of production and the crew when you lost your shit. And I'm gonna talk about it. Heather Dubrow, I would think you could credibly, I don't think grifting is the term, but she seems to want to rewrite the history of whatever happened that night, and Noella saying, I'm not going to let you get away with that, and I'm going to use it to try to topple the queen.
Yeah.
I mean, my fucking God. It's like takes my breath away.
I know. I do love that, because I think that instinct that Heather has, it reminds me so much of why, for me, I don't enjoy Beverly Hills as much anymore, because they're trying to keep everything like, shh, no, we don't talk about that. And then Lisa, puts her hand and taps Dorit on the leg, like, stop, like, fall in line. And I'm like, this isn't even real anymore. So I do appreciate Noella for being like, let's call a spade a spade. Let's mention it all. I do enjoy that.
I mean, and Brandi Glanville on Beverly Hills slapped a cast member, threw wine on another or whatever it was that she threw at Eileen. And it's like they had these moments, but Brandi, and during those times, she was performing for the cameras. Yeah. It was a part of the moment. She knew that her cast members would react with horror. That was sort of a part of this, is like, I'm doing this for attention. Give it to me, negative or otherwise. What Heather was doing was just a guttural reaction of anger that someone at some point agreed wouldn't be shown or didn't happen. You know, obviously she's saying that what Noella said happened didn't, but I don't know. I mean, like, what do you think the deal is? What do you think? Do you think it's appropriate to compare this to whatever happened with Nene's Closet?
Well, you know, Nene was going through some things that Heather is not currently. So Nene is a legend to me. I will always like just hold her at a different regard because of what she was dealing with for years. I personally do not think Nene should have been on the show. I think she should have taken the time, and then, you know, she could have come back like she's doing so well now. And all thoughts to Nini, we love her. But anyway, so to compare that with Heather, I would say, you know, Nini had,
that's a great point.
She was like having a really rough time. And so for her, it was very different, very emotional driven. Now, Heather Dubrow, yes, emotional driven, but I think it's also control for her. And I think she was probably shocked at the audacity of, you know, Bravo to bring this into her home when she's, I think in a lot of people's minds, including mine, like she's kind of doing Bravo a solid, like coming back on OC to bring it back up to a different level, to share her family and her home and to provide, like to class it back up a bit. And she does have that side to her that I told someone reminds me of either like a head nun or a school marm, where she ain't playing with you if you step out of line in a way that she doesn't like. She will read you down. She will, she's raised 5 kids. So like she doesn't seem to have a very long fuse when it comes to mayhem and chaos in her home. So I can absolutely see it. And in her mind, she probably thought it was, you know, warranted, and it isn't something that they should talk about. So for Noella wanting to talk about it, I think it's going to be a pretty, pretty interesting episode.
Is there a way that this will end well for Noella to try to take on Heather Dubrow in this kind of way?
Well, it'll be a great season, but for Heather, I mean, they could come out friends. That's the thing about Housewives, is even as crazy as it gets, you know, with people yelling and fans taking sides and being willing to like fight in the streets over it, they more than likely will come out friends, because as much as you have someone like, you know, Meredith yelling, I never want to film with her, like it's an ensemble cast. You kind of got it. That's sort of what you sign up for. If you're cashing the check, like get on camera. If this is such an issue for you, like walk away, give the money back, right? So I don't know. I think Heather is one to stand back and like look at the chessboard and be like, okay, if Noella's still going to be a part of this, like we got to come to some sort of understanding. So it might be a blow up for a minute, but I can see them getting over it.
What do you think the difference is between alliance and friendship on Housewives?
I think you can tell when the Housewives are actually friends with one another. So it seems real, it seems authentic, and they hang out outside of production. So for me, when I see them truly bonding and being friends and cutting up and making jokes and stuff, like we've seen that on so many different, you know, franchises, that's great. You got to love that. Alliances to me are when they say, oh, you haven't even talked to me since we last filmed. And then they have to get over that at the beginning of every season, which happens a lot in New York, you know. And so then you realize like, okay, this is more of a friendship for the show, which is fine. You know, maybe they don't run in the same circles during their normal lives. And when the show is airing, that's when they come together in their little, you know, alliances.
And do you think what's the impact of mutual respect or lack thereof? Because you can have a friendship without mutual respect. That's usually when those friendships don't last, you know, like how does that factor into this?
So now when you say that, the first thing I think of is how Sonia is regarded by Ramona and the Countess. So I think there's a friendship there, but I do not believe that there is mutual respect. The way they treat her, the way they talk to her and about her, they, you know, have jokes at her expense, but they're still friends, you know. She and Ramona like share a bed, and she and the Countess, they're very close, but the respect is not there. So I think if that works for two individuals on a friendship dynamic, then, you know, great, good for you. And it just, we can tell. And I think fans can see that.
It just makes me wonder. It's a great point. It makes me wonder a little bit. I don't know why I'm thinking about respect through that lens, but I'm curious for your thoughts about it when it comes to Salt Lake, because I feel like the fandom creators have had a lot of questions and commentary around the idea that people seem to have been chasing friendships or relationships with Mary, for example, with Jen in seasons past, and sort of oddly enough this past week. And I wonder how mutual respect or even
you know, one way style respect factors into that, because I do feel like that's sometimes the missing piece when it comes to friendship versus alliance. And it's a little bit confusing to watch people battle with each other for something that's maybe unattainable when it yes. comes to like real, true, trust driven
yeah.
female friendship. Like, I don't understand what the foundation is. Like, what do you think the foundation is in some of these friendship style battles on Salt Lake?
Okay. So first of all, let me say, for reasons that are and are not her own, I do not believe that Mary is capable of true friendship right now in her life.
Tell me.
With another woman. Because she cannot hear opinions that don't mirror her own. It's difficult for her. Maybe she's getting better. I don't know. It seems as though a friend should be able to tell you when you mess up, when you hurt their feelings, when you've done something you shouldn't do, whatever it is, and you move forward, right? And you say, okay, thank you for, you know, being the mirror to reflect that back to me. I'm going to think about that, whatever. Mary blows up. Mary demands respect and reverence, right? Because that has been her life. And so whenever I see her in these moments when someone's trying to talk to her, or like Whitney seems to have been truly hurt, and she seems to have really believed that she and Mary were friends. And so to watch her struggle and try to connect with Mary on a human level and understand how they can fix it. And then Mary, you know, at that lunch is just coming for her over and over and over. You didn't answer my call. You didn't answer my call, but you didn't pick up my call. So for Mary, she can't get over that she was not the most important thing in Whitney's life. So if you don't have respect for someone's life, like Whitney has children, Whitney has a family, Whitney has other things going on, but Mary has to be the most important thing, and she couldn't move on from it. So I think just the way that she has lived her life, you know, and Mary will say that she's been forced to live her life that way, and that's might very well be true, but it's definitely made it, I think, impossible for her, unless she does a lot of work, to be a real friend to someone.
I don't disagree on the idea of the amount of work ahead for Mary, but I think so much of that comes from a trauma and survivor's journey. Like the fact that she seems to exist in a world of being very reactive to things and not emotional about things, but there's a way that she processes things differently. And I think a lot of that might have to do with the fact that she's seems in many ways to have like a very complicated, difficult, dark childhood, maybe young adulthood, whatever happened in her first marriage before she married her current husband, like mm-hmm. the difficulty losing her mother essentially during the transition between her grandmother's passing and Mary now being seen as the figurehead for the church, and as a result, the person bringing in enormous streams of income, regardless of how that money is mm-hmm. being made. I don't know. I feel like I totally agree about the capacity that she has and the lack of not understanding, but maybe sometimes like nuance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a way to respond to things and say, you're doing this because you don't like me. You're doing this because you don't respect yeah. me. You're doing this because you don't hear me. And that can lead to like guttural, reactive moments of saying, essentially, I deserve more than this. Like, you should respect me. You should value me. And some of that might be because of the enormous power she helms in her community. And some of that might have to do with the fact that, like, she has had to fight for it. You know, like, the fight or flight style friendships are not long for this world, mm-hmm. but they are, I think, in Mary's case, incredibly nuanced. You know, like, and with Whitney, I'm sure Whitney has had her own process, her own journey, and obviously, as we're now seeing with her business and the complications of that, the stresses of it.
Yeah.
But I think her life, as we understand it, noting her leaving the church and everything else, I just don't know that she's – it's unfair to compare her life to another person's and her struggles with another person's. I'm acknowledging that. But I also think, like, because Mary can't necessarily cope or communicate in a way that I think some people would – want to understand what she's experienced, there's like that valley there mm-hmm. between them, you know. It doesn't, and it doesn't excuse anything that Mary has done to Whitney, which has been incredibly cruel. Mary does seem to thrive in cruel, guttural responses.
Yeah, she does.
Certainly we've seen it evidenced on social, but I do also think that there's like something else happening here with Mary's just like instinctive fight or flight.
Oh, for
Don't
sure.
You think a little, or is that could be completely off?
No, I think, look, anybody who, if you give someone the elevator pitch on like, who is Mary, it's obvious right away that this person, you know, has lived their life in such a way that they have not had the benefit of growth. And mm-hmm. so to put
Such
someone kind of stunted,
Such a good point.
I'll say she's stunted. Okay. And to put her on a television show, I'm surprised she said yes to it, but of course you don't know what you don't know. Right. So she said yes to it. Mm-hmm. To put her on a television show with these women and put her in these situations, it's almost like some sort of like sociology experiment that we're watching. And I struggle with that because some of her behavior cannot be excused and it's not okay. And 100%. It doesn't matter what the curve is or what the reason is. You cannot do this. You cannot put this out into the universe. So it's difficult to watch her in a situation where you know that she doesn't have the equipment to be there, or the knowledge or the life experience, whatever you want to say. And so I don't know, maybe she grows from it is what I tell myself. Like if you took, you know, somebody from a different time and dropped them in, like they'd have to acclimate at some point. So I hope that Mary acclimates and she realizes like, ooh, wow, I cringe looking back at my behavior. Guys, sorry, I just kind of been hanging out in my closet for 20 years. You know, I feel bad about that now, whatever. That's what I hope. But it's difficult and it's extremely offensive at a lot of points to watch happen. So what I don't get, and I want to know your thoughts on this, I cannot fathom why Meredith is riding so hard for her. And I will never get over people trying to explain to Mary how she was offensive in two different ways and Meredith jumping in to change the direction of where that was going.
Yeah, and Meredith has tried to explain what she intended to say in those moments. And the reality is her shifting gears from a conversation about racist language into like, it's not just about this. There's other stuff here. And shifting into this.
Jen being Jen's friend and be nicer
preamble.
To Jen.
It's so odd to me. And it's she's trying to do it through the lens of like, you guys aren't being real here, but genuinely, since when do you care?
Yeah.
Like, I mean that without being even.
Oh, no, I get it.
Not even as a critique, but like, literally, mm-hmm. if you're talking about experiencing whiplash, imagine what everybody else is thinking in that moment. And the reality is that there does seem to be mutual affection, or had been, who knows where they are now, between Mary and Meredith in a way that they saw each other that was different and also helpful because you don't want Mary to be on an island by herself.
Yeah.
There's just too much there and it wouldn't help propel the story forward, these women's stories forward, if that was the case. Meredith is making some moves that I would think started from a place of anger toward Jen and also confusion and frustration toward Lisa mm-hmm. that has led to a point where she's making mistakes or doing things that I personally disagree with. And I'm like, what happens from this? Because like you had us with the tub, you had us with the iconic moments, but like something shifted here. You bit off a little too much more than you could chew, or we like the ways that you were chewing the scenery, but I think someone told you the world would like them regardless. Like I don't even believe that, saying that out loud, but like something is odd here. Mm-hmm. And I, in answer to your question, I don't know how to answer it. I don't know how to answer it. I really don't.
It's fascinating. And the housewives really are like, it's like the stock market. Like they go up, they go down, like, yay, good. Thank you so much. You're doing so great. Oh, you just really helped humanity and the show. And then the next one, you're like, oh, I'm so embarrassed by everything you've ever done. So you just never know. You never know how it's going to go. But I mean, Meredith, that was a down episode for real. I mean, from the outfits to the choices, behaviorally, it was, I did not know what the heck was going on. It was a dumpster fire.
And speaking of dumpster fires, there is news that, listen, guys, we're recording this Friday morning-ish. Maybe this will be said to be complete hot goss and not based in reality at all. But there's news that came out late last night, the Salt Lake City reunion film yesterday, that maybe Mary didn't show up. It was scheduled to film in Salt Lake City. They switched it to LA, and maybe she doesn't show.
Wow.
And how does that change the game? Like, do you think that Mary is more aware of what it means to be on reality TV now because of the negative feedback that she's gotten from people? Or do you think that's just come with time and just like understanding of what it actually means to be on a show like this?
So, you know, I'm surprised that Mary came back. So the fact that she came back means that she's getting something out of it that she enjoys. So she already has plenty of money. So it's something else, mm-hmm. right? So mm-hmm. I don't think any negative feedback would be a reason for her to disengage, if you will. So if, first of all, let me say, if she does not show up to the reunion, then I think the Adrian Maloof rule needs to be applied.
Absolutely.
No ifs, ands, or buts. Like, if you don't show up to the reunion, bye. We never see you again. Like, that's in your contract. You don't get to skip out on that. So that's number one. We'll set that aside. Two, yeah, she got into, you know, a Twitter tussle with some people giving her their, you know, valid opinions of things that were said and the way that that all went down. And I think look, you can say anything about any housewife. You got to be able to take mm-hmm. the heat. So Meredith being on there, whether I agree with anything that she has done, whether it enrages me, she being on there fielding questions on Twitter, let's hope it was her and not her social media manager. Mm-hmm. But if you're willing to do that and be like, okay, that's giving me something to think about, good for you, because this is a, you know, a shared experience. Like, you're putting something out there, we react to it. If you can't take the reaction, you shouldn't be on the show. Mm-hmm. If a reaction that people have to watching your behavior like enrages you, do not sign mm-hmm. up for reality television. So if that is like all of a sudden Mary has hit a wall, okay, bye. If you didn't go to the reunion and you've hit your point, see you later. But you have to know that this is part of it by now.
And yet not knowing is sometimes part of the joy. The not knowing and not understanding the reality that some of these women are being held accountable in ways that they wouldn't be in their personal life because of their wealth and access and power. And for some of them, celebrity and fame. Like, the fact that sometimes people are coming to terms with that or understanding it on camera or as a result of what they've said on camera IRL is fucking fascinating to me. Yeah. And it feels like that to me, honestly, I think that the negative critique, Mary was like, I don't need this. Like, I don't need to be critiqued by people. You don't know me. You don't understand. I didn't say the thing that I did, or if I did, here's why. Mm-hmm. But then I didn't again. Like, she has enough of what she has to be able to say those things without facing consequences, and on reality TV, the audience can hold you accountable even if you would rather not,
yeah.
or even if your co-stars would rather not. Mm-hmm. And I think she was like, I don't want to do this. I hate this now. This isn't what I quote unquote signed up for, mm-hmm. without, like, those are spiritual quote unquotes, because I don't know that she actually literally said that, but like you gotta love a spiritual quote unquote. But like the idea that she was like, I don't need this. And also, you know, housewives can be very lucrative, but that's money isn't enough of a reason here. Maybe she thought it was going to be fun or whatever. And when it stopped being fun, she's like, I'm going to get off the ride.
Yeah.
And if you're punishing someone for not showing up to the reunion by like withholding a payment to someone who doesn't care about money.
She doesn't care about money.
Or she doesn't care about money as a consequence.
No.
Being used in that way. And it sounds to me like it's not up to the network in the sense of like, we're going to apply the Adrian Maloof rule. Cause I think Mary applied it to herself. Mm-hmm. Like, it sounds like she was like, it sounds like she was well aware that if she didn't show up, that meant she quit the show. And if this is even true, by the way,
yeah,
again, it could be debunked by the time this is in y'all's ears. But, you know, it sounds like it's something that she decided to do. And the way that the show was structured and the fact that they were filming in L.A., it sounds like that's maybe what happened.
Could be. And this is just what's so fascinating. I mean, we hear these things. We don't really know. We'll see how it plays out. But either way, it's always an interesting day in the Bravosphere. Always.
Right? It feels like there's always something that's going on mm-hmm. that like completely reshifts. And I just think it's really unfortunate because Mary specifically is connected to so much of each woman's individual storyline, responses to things, questions about how they behaved. She's really a little bit of a through line there, a connective thread. And to not have that, noting that Jen Shaw showed up mm-hmm. and, you know, travel for her is limited. So the fact that she was able to do that, obviously wanted to do it. And the fact that she was there facing what she was and Mary doesn't show up. And Mary filmed this season after the Bravosphere was talking about her church and the way that it was.
Yep, that's not new.
It's not new. And it also kind of makes you wonder, like, what's coming up in the next couple weeks?
I don't know. I mean, and that's – I keep waiting to, you know, see more of that storyline. So I'm looking forward to that. And it's, again, not anything that we haven't heard before. But if there are more details – and then Whitney alluded to, you know, the two of them, Mary and her, you know, Robert Sr., as they call him, being predators. And I'm like, what are you saying? Because we've all read things online, I'm sure, by now, and testimonies from former parishioners and family members and things like that. But I want to know Whitney's take on it, because she seems to be a little bit changed after speaking to Cameron.
Wait, Whitney called them Whitney called Mary a predator?
Yeah, she said, you know, if it's true, you know, talking to Cameron, I'll have to go back and pull that footage and I'll send it to you. But she's like, said that they were like predators. And I'm like, how? And so what I immediately thought of was like, you know, for funds, but then also there's a whole chain, and I'll have to find it, where a woman shared text messages supposedly from Robert Sr., like soliciting her for an affair and saying all this stuff to her. And like, I'm into you, and what would you do for me, and all this kind of stuff. So it could very well be that. And, you know, choosing that word, though, was just like my eyebrows went up, and I'm like, what are we talking about? So
not to criticize Whitney, but if she's using that kind of language, which is heavily, that is, I'm thinking Whitney is making like an aggressive, specific choice in using that term. I assume she's using it for Jen as well, who's been credibly accused of being a predator to God only knows how many people who were specifically preyed upon because they were viewed successfully as being vulnerable. So like,
absolutely,
there's more than enough of the use of predatory accusations to go around here, and maybe start, not to say don't stop, but like maybe start with the person who's facing significant jail time as a result of those predatory, you know, alleged crimes.
The scene, I think it's going to be a classic, of her stuffing the bags for charity with her natural nails, which we've never, I don't think, seen before. And
oh, I didn't even notice.
Yes. And her mom. And I, you know, this is one of those things with Real Housewives where you want to laugh at it, but then the fact that her mom is there and so pure of heart, and you know that her mom, even though they have to know that this is legit and she's probably facing some real jail time, is willing to, like, it's reminded me of The Giving Tree, honestly. Have you read that book?
Of course.
Okay. All right. Fantastic. I had never read
it. One of the best.
I had never read it until I had a child, because everybody was always like, it's a downer, don't read it. I was in
No, it's Shel Silverstein.
I know. And I love
sacrifice you can make for those you love.
I know. And I've read every other one of his books. I'd never read that one. I read that book in the throes of postpartum depression. I could not stop crying.
My God.
Let me tell you what. So now I think of that book all the time. It is such a downer. I can see the beauty in it now, but my God, what a downer. And to me, that was The Giving Tree, seeing her mother sitting there on camera. And I don't think we've ever seen her mom on camera before. Such a Giving Tree, being willing to like give her retirement and be on camera saying, I believe you're innocent, stuffing these little bags. It was hard, but you know, it's a tough moment.
Yeah, I think there's a beautiful sadness about the story of The Giving Tree and the idea that you will sacrifice literally every part of you to provide for someone you love and the greatest sacrifice. And then to me, I would just apply a whole lot of frustration to the idea that Jen's disconnection from the reality of what she's facing has come to a point where her mother would even be allowed to give in that
Correct.
Way.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're having that conversation while she's in full glam in her very fancy house.
Yes, her rental.
When her mom has worked as an educator for, they said like 35 years or some extreme amount of time, where her mom has already made sacrifices for her family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, her mom discussed culturally the idea that in their culture, the oldest daughter is really seen as the leader of the family. It's something that Jen has talked about too. And I would love to hear more about that, because I think actually the pressure and stress, not only as the provider for your immediate family, but as seen as the figurehead for your larger family, and now being accused of the crimes that you are, knowing that you employed many of your family members, is to me incredibly fascinating. And it's, I want to understand more of like the employing of people and how much of, which we'll never get this, but like how much Jen understood the risk she was applying by inviting family members to join in this like sordid business. But all that being said, just even understanding the complications of needing to ask for help without applying any kind of critique through the lens of like, and I'm the one who's supposed to be seen as the guide for everyone else, is to me very fascinating. But it's just so fucking sad that that check might be cashed, because like we now know in real time the benefit of updates that I guess everyone has pled out or is taking a plea deal or is pleading guilty. And
yeah,
I just, what is it worth? I don't know. There's a human instinct to survive and a human instinct to fight to the very end. But like, your mom only has so many branches to give.
Yeah.
You know, like, is it worth it? What is she really providing for you with that money? Because the cost is enormous. Is she really providing you with legal shade? Because I don't think that that is likely.
Yeah.
I think the longer she fights, the worse it gets for her. The fact that she's going to trial, to me,
same,
makes the ending much worse. So like, why are we accepting potentially the sacrifice of your mom when the reality is that by continuing this fight, you're just sacrificing some of your family's security, which they could really use right now?
Yeah. And I, you know, there's two sides to it, right? It's like, does she really intend on taking that money from her mother, or did she just want to have, you know, a scene on television showing us how much her mother believes in her, that she's innocent, that she's willing to do that? And I think, you know, for someone who is truly like sort of like the head of the family and so on, you would think that they would not allow anyone to suffer at their expense for something. But I think that's where maybe a rational chip, if that's the way it's going, could be missing, where they can't admit, like, I'm in a no-win situation. No amount of money, no hours of legal firms can get me out of this. I have to accept this, and I have to make the smartest decision now that I can. So we shall see how it goes. I think from what we've seen of Jen Shah so far, there may not be a connection to reality. So it will be an interesting trial. And I hope her mother does not write that check.
Oh, God, I really hope she doesn't. I think that there's like a disconnection with reality and then just a disagreement with it.
Yeah.
I think Jen's like, I'm just disagreeing with what the reality of what's being presented. I am innocent, but regardless, I'm going to fight this as long as I can. And who knows what she sacrificed behind the scenes in order to make this possible. It's just that what we're seeing, I don't know. I would think like the very first thing that they would be doing is downsizing. And in conjunction, and maybe she doesn't need a legal team that has a $2 million retainer. Mm-hmm. I think she's downsized her legal team since. So, and I don't know how much of that was her choice versus their decision. That could have been a question of money as well. Like,
yeah.
Can you really afford us? And it's okay for me to say, if I was in her shoes, like, I can't, you know, like, I don't know. It's going to be real tough. And then you add in the, like, how much of this is the denial of reality and how much of this is trying to prolong my role on the reality show before it all goes away.
Yeah. True.
Oh, man. Listen, you know, I could talk to you forever. This was very, this is one of those shows where it's like, you take a left turn, you take three to the right. I just am now, I'm like thinking in my head, like even about the stuff that I've said, like, have I changed my mind 6 or 8 times through the course of this conversation? Entirely possible. But that's also why I love having conversations like these, because like, who even knows how you feel in a given moment on a given day? And the idea that we can adjust or shift or apply a sense of empathy to someone's story or struggle for the benefit of trying to understand human behavior.
Yeah.
I just find it so fucking interesting. And I love talking to you about it. I really do.
Same, same. And honestly, like, I think Real Housewives, you got a bad rap in the beginning. Like, oh, you're watching Bravo Real Housewives. And it's like, let me tell you, it's psychologically fascinating to do. So yeah, it's amazing. The content that they give us is well beyond, you know, the silliness of like labels and bickering, for sure.
Yeah. And, you know, to have two women talking about women's stories, I mean, I can't imagine anything better than that, because I think these women's stories are so fascinating. And I always find it just extra enjoyable to have those kinds of conversations, because, I mean, there's an identity complex that sometimes people apply to their interest and love for Bravo, but there's also the idea of like identity connection. And even doing that through the lens of gender and the lens of the cultural environment of being a woman right now, let alone a woman attempting to share or create her story on reality TV in a very, very specific environment is really just, for me personally, enjoyable. So
same.
I'm so appreciative for you coming on. Tell the people what you're working on, where to follow you on social, what you're thinking about talking about next. Your deep dives are incredible. Your recaps when you're watching these shows in real time on your stories are amazing. What have you got cooking?
So many things. Let me tell you, if I told you all the dives that I start and I don't finish, sometimes they get too dark. Sometimes they get scary. Sometimes I'm just like, this is too much. Like, yeah. So always working on something. I'm on Instagram, Bravo, Bravo, Ducking, Bravo. Twitter, I am Bravo Ducking. And yeah, I do what I can. There's no shortage of scandals and things to look into in the Bravosphere.
God bless him for it, I have to say. And guys, after you're following Bravo, Bravo, Duck, and Bravo, follow me on Instagram. Posted some sassy photos of my clawfus. Shout out to Jill Zarin for a cameo, which in that process, which I'll discuss on the next Andy's Girls, at Dame Galley. And also Andy's Girls Patreon. Guys, I've been away. I had COVID. And now I'm catching up for last time. So join me for a just released bonus episode exclusive OGs of the AGs chit-chatting about the Sex and the City reboot, a whole fucking lot of conversation about Noella and Jen, and a ton about SLC. An hour and 20 minute bonus episode exclusive to the Patreon, the number one way to support Andy's Girls. You get invites to special Zoom events, bonus episodes depending on the level of support you join, and even a premium tier where you can record a Patreon episode with yours truly. That's patreon.com/Andy's Girls. A link is always in the show notes for this episode. Listen, thanks for coming on, man.
Hey, you're so welcome. I'm glad you healed up. I really appreciate being on mid-heal. I'm glad you're turning the corner on it. I'm so glad. Hey, do you think that the stuff that you had done in, where did you go? What was the name of that hospital? I just blanked on
Sleepy,
it.
I was at Phelps Hospital, I want to say, in Sleepy Motherfucking Hollow, yes. New York, which I was like, oh, that sounds like a movie name, and it didn't connect me until I was driven in a medical car and until the driver was like, you know, Sleepy Hollow, movie. The, you know, Ichabod Crane of it all. I was like, oh my God, this Sleepy Hollow. Anyway, yeah, so I had the antibody treatment that works with Omicron. There's, I think, three different ones, and I got the good stuff.
Good. So you think that helped? Yeah. That's pretty amazing. I love that your doctor did that for you.
Yeah, it's honestly, the doctor at the hospital was like, you have to understand that this is essentially liquid gold. It's impossible to get. And I was like, I totally get it. And I qualified for it because of my underlying condition, mm-hmm. and some concerns about what would happen with COVID. And I had a conversation with my doctor's office yesterday, actually, because I'm going back at the end of the month to do some testing and see where I am, just for my overall health and mm-hmm. with my overall health complications plus COVID. So it is one of those things where you can't really know the unknowable. True. But I'm sure that it made a mark in how I have been able to recover, but also the recovery is ongoing. It's something I've heard from many Andy's Girls listeners who've slid into my DMs with their own experiences going through COVID, some of whom are experiencing COVID, the COVID long haul. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's discussion of the different ways that your body can react to COVID OG, let's say COVID classic versus Delta versus Omicron. And the one thing that has helped me as I continue to experience fatigue and other symptoms is the hardest thing for me, because my world was already limited due to an underlying chronic health condition prior to COVID, like walking in temperate weather was so important for my mental health. And like, to go through the fatigue that I'm experiencing right now, it's very tough to hold back from wanting to, you know, go for the long walks or even moderate sized walks, because I went outside during the cold post quarantine and got very, very sick after. Mm. And it was a combination of the actual just cold in New York and also my body being like, I'm not really ready for anything yet. So that's been the toughest, but most important thing. Like, people talk about medical rest, but like, it is real and I would say required. And it's also a privilege. I don't have kids, as my psychiatrist tells me repeatedly. You live alone. So like, take care of yourself, because if you fall down, who's going to find you? Which is great. That's great to hear when you're battling COVID, like that reminder, because I forgot. But, you know, it is a privilege to say that, you know, aside from PK, love of my life, my fish son, mm-hmm. when it comes to like immediate in your household, not only from wanting to protect people from also getting it, but just in the sense of the ability to be able to lay down.
Absolutely.
is a privilege. And I also just want to shout out, and thank you so much for asking, and just shout out anyone who's going through this or experiencing this. it's individual for everyone. Be careful about, you know, the ways that we try to help and guide each other, the language that we use, because each person's individual journey is different. So you don't really know what someone is going through, including during COVID. So that's the one gentle thing of, like, the gentle support is so helpful and tips are helpful. Yeah. And try not to apply judgment as best you can, because this stuff is tough for all of us. And I'm grateful to be at the point that I am now, but I still cough every fucking couple. It's hard for me to, like, let out air without coughing, which isn't ideal when you're doing an audio podcast. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I have literally four different beverages in front of me, depending on what my body needs to heal while I record. And it's day by day. And I just want to thank you for asking, and also thank for the AGs for who continue to get in touch and check in and send support. And, you know, you do the very best that you can. And it's one of those things. Try not to apply a judgment against yourself or a shame against yourself, because at the end of the day, this is a public health crisis.
Yeah.
And how helpful is that when we're dealing with it's a public health crisis. Just try to protect yourselves, your loved ones, strangers, and do the very best you can. KN95s, N95s, surgical masks. There's more information online. You don't need to hear it from me. You actually don't even need to hear this part from me, but I'm just going to say it anyway, that, you know, washing your hands, getting your booster, social distancing.
Yeah.
I live in New York City, which has been hit hard once again, and many other areas are feeling that same angst. And so, you know, just try to take care of yourselves, not only in how you're trying to protect yourselves against this physically, but also spiritually as well. So hopefully AG can continue to be some kind of outlet or salve for some of you. You know, it's CDC says listening to Andrew's Girls is one of the best ways to. And I trust the CDC. When have they ever led us wrong?
Never.
But just to say that hopefully this week will these episodes will continue to be a way for people to be able to breathe a little bit better. Mm-hmm. Like, when I hear that from people, I'm like, there's nothing better that you can tell me. And so I just want to say thank you to everyone. I didn't get a chance to do like a Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa holiday episode or New Year's episode because I was, you know, experiencing the cove. But maybe this will be that moment now to say how much I'm thankful and appreciative to everyone who signs up for the Patreon, to everyone who writes a nice, positive 5-star review on Apple Pods or Spotify, like to everyone who follows on the gram, because that helps with metrics and marketing, like, and to people just for giving me your time and inviting us into your ears and your mind each week. I'm thankful for it. And my hope is that we are going to get through all of this together and get to the other side, whatever it may be. Well, hopefully AG will still be there.
It will, for sure. And so, I just want to say thank you for always sharing, you know, everything about, you know, your journey as you experience it, when you were getting your COVID shot, when you were anything that happens. I think it's wonderful that you're so open about it. And I think it helps people, it helps me. And so thank you.
Well, thank you for saying that. And it's something that I have made a specific point to do and share to highlights. I have shared to my highlights on my Instagram things that worked for me during the, you know, height of the COVID, mm-hmm. yada, yada. And also my experiences getting the shots, because for those of us, for anyone experiencing anything, the situation is tough. And as someone who has a very complicated chronic condition that still hasn't been treated and diagnosed to the point that it needs to be, it is an extra special because my body can react in ways that are very no bueno with like normal everyday medication or environmental concerns, the temperature, like when my body's temperature changes, like crazy things happen. So like to go through the process of like, cool, this is like a new thing that's going on, the COVID, we didn't have it in 2018 and now it's back.
Mm-hmm.
To go through that, it can be very stressful. It's stressful on everyone. It's a it's an interesting, you know, spin-off kind of stress with someone who already has existing health concerns.
For sure.
And if that information is a benefit, understanding it is just my experience, but my hope is to, in life, remove a little bit of fear. And if in sharing my story that removes a little bit of fear, all the better. Listen, I just added an additional hour to this. So thanks for that. Like, I need an excuse to talk. Guys, listen, we're sending you love. I'm sending you love. Bravo, bravo, Jackie.
Thank
bravo,
you.
'Cause you know I a die for you. Thank you. And guys, hang in there. We'll chat with you soon. AG will be here. You know, go on the Patreon, do whatever. Look at my fucking claw office surrounded by dresses, things I can't afford. Living my best life.
Do
living
it.
My best little Susie Q, sassy G life. Hang in there, guys. Get into my DMs. Email me andysgirlsshow@gmail.com with your satchels, which, as a reminder, the language of Andy's Girl Satchels of Gold, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Caloran Ben Simone, are your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, reactions to all things Housewives and Bravo. So you can slide into my DMs on Instagram at Dame Galley and genuinely shoot me your long form thoughts or send me an email. I love a thesis. I love an LSAT moment. I love a medical degree, philosophical, spiritual, or literal otherwise. So let me know your thoughts, because I pick those apart and understand them and respond to them and celebrate them on Patreon, and need to do more on some more AG Classic. Anyway, guys, hang in there. BB.
Bravo. Bravo.
BBDF. Did I do it? No, BBDB.
You got it. You got it. I was like, she'll find it.
COVID brain. That's what happened there. That's not me absolutely fucking up.
No, zero judgments.
Listen, this is the place for zero judgment. Unless you're like one of a million house husbands.
True.
I've got a couple words. Hang in there, guys. We'll chat with you soon. Bye-bye.